Picking up where we left off last time, here on slide 5.10 on separate compilation dealing with module scope. You should be aware that variables have a certain lifetime. If you declare a variable above all of the functions in any of your separately compiled files, not inside of a function, but outside of functions, they basically, and the variables you also define, I should have said declare, I should have said define, and the variables that you also define in main, they have a lifetime for the existence of the program. They exist for the lifetime of the program. They are only accessible for the file scope variables, for variables that are defined outside of functions in a file. Those are essentially global variables. They are file scoped global variables. They can be accessed by any code from their point of definition to the end of that file. Not in other files. You'd have to use extern to do that. But these are file scoped variables. All other variables that are defined inside of other functions, they only exist for the lifetime of the function. Those are usually referred to as automatic variables. Unless you actually define a variable inside of a function to be static, that gives it a lifetime beyond that function. Its scope is still within that function, but it exists beyond the lifetime of the function, and it retains its values from one call of the function to the next. What is quite common in separate compilations is that you want to limit as much as possible access to identifiers you want to limit the access only to where it's needed. So here's a very common little type of scenario. We've got our main program here, and it needs to invoke some functions in Unit A. And Unit A needs to invoke some functions in Unit B, but main does not need to have access to any of the functions or any of the information that's in Unit B. So, and we also will assume that main maybe has some constants, some type definitions that the other two modules need. So, what we would do for that is, in main.cpp, we would include main.h. We would include some constant.h that contains the system-wide constant. And we would include unit a.h, the header file for unit a. By including the header file for unit a, that would give us the prototypes for the functions down in unit a so that we could call them from the file that contains main. In unit a, we would include maybe the constant.h for the global constant. We would include unit a.a header file so that functions that are defined after other functions can still call the functions defined previously above them. That basically would just give us the prototypes that were in unit a.h declared at the head of unit a. Then we would also include unit b.h so that we would get those prototypes put in there so that unit A could call functions down in unit B. In unit B, we would just include constant.h and unit B.h. And that way then, if main tries to invoke a function, if any function from the file that contains main tries to invoke a function that's down in unit B, since it hasn't included its header file here, it won't have access to the prototype declaration, and therefore the compiler will catch that as an error, and it will complain. It'll complain about an undefined function. And that limits the scope. That limits the access of those functions to where they need to be called from. Question?
Why would you
Oh, I'm assuming that main.h has a few things in it differently than constant.h. Main.h might have, I'm assuming that there are other functions down here in main which aren't going to be called by unit A or unit B. So we wouldn't put their prototypes in constant.h. Okay? That's all that's being assumed here. All right. On the next slide, here's a typical little problem that we can actually solve, and this used to be the way we would solve this access problem, with separate compilation. Let's say, for example, that we've got some graphical trace debugging functions in our program. And so when our user runs our program, we want them to be able to select some option of actually turning on a graphical trace so they can see our program graphically maybe displaying things that it's doing, and then other times they can turn that off. So we may have functions like show insert rather than just do an insert, or show delete, things like that. We may have some trace flag, some trace variable that if it's true, then we want to show the tracing. And if it's false, we don't. Well, if somewhere up in main is where the option is presented to the user to decide whether to turn the tracing on or off, we might need some functions like turn trace on or off. And then we would have to pass that trace control variable down into some of the lower functions. And eventually they might, like unit A and unit B here, and then they might have to pass it down a little bit further. And eventually we get down to some functions that use it to decide whether to actually show the tracing or not show the tracing. But there's a problem with this. The problem being that the trace flag isn't really needed for some of those intermediate functions like unit A and unit B. It basically just complicates their interface because it adds in a parameter that they don't use except to just pass it along to other functions. And it might actually open it up for accidental misuse. So the way to solve this, there's a couple of solutions. One would be to make trace global. That's an ugly solution. Because basically, while that simplifies the interface, it leaves trace now being open to where it can be changed from anywhere. And we have no real way of easily figuring out where it can be changed from and where it can't be changed from without looking through every line of the code, practically. The other solution would be to hide trace in the private declarations of a separately compiled module and limit the access to just those module functions. So here's some code on the next slide that does that. We could have some tracer, separately compiled file, and in the header file for that, we'll provide access to a few functions. One, to initialize the trace, turn the trace on or off, and check to see whether the trace is active or not. None of those functions take any variables. They don't take any parameters. And then inside of the tracer CPP, we'll actually define trace to be a Boolean, but we'll put that Boolean at the top of the file outside of any other declarations. That makes this thing file scoped. Trace is now file scoped, and it becomes global for the rest of this file, which means these functions inside of here can access it. Now, that basically clean encapsulates trace inside of this code. It's really the same type of encapsulation and limited access information hiding that we get with a class. This is the way you had to do sort of things like this to delimit your access and protect things before classes got added to C and C++. In C, this was fairly common to do. And it would clean up the interface, as you can see here on slide 513. We have to add in a couple extra function calls now, trace initialize and trace active. And now we don't have to bother to pass trace around anywhere. Whenever these other functions need to know whether the trace is on or not, they just call trace active. Now, you can do it like this nowadays, but it's actually better to do this nowadays as a class rather than relying upon this older, separately compiled method. It still works, it's still valid, but the class mechanism has sort of superseded this type of necessary programming, what used to be necessary programming. Questions about that? Okay. Well, let's look at a little bit more of an involved example here on slide 514. One of the old 1044 books, one of the older editions, I grabbed some code from them. They had a little sort of a name, phone, address, friends type of program. And basically all this thing did was sort of allow you to maintain a little contact information for your friends. And so you could open up a file, you could get an entry, get the name, get the phone number, and you could insert another entry into it, and then you could write the entries out. And this isn't a real structure chart. It's what Dell and Weems at the time sort of called their module hierarchy chart, which was sort of a slightly weird form of a structure chart, but that's the way they did it. It had just about the same information. You can see here, this represents both an input-output parameter. This would be just an output parameter. Here's an input parameter. You can tell that from the arrows. What they don't distinguish in is whether the arrows, whether they are passing control parameter or data parameter. They didn't bother to distinguish whether these calls were conditional calls or not. They decided to leave out a lot of information in their what they called module chart, but regardless. They had all of this in one file. And so I just thought I would use this for some demonstration purposes. Let's say we break this thing up now into three separately compiled files. We've got friends.cpp, which it will contain main, open for output, and write entries. Those are the functions that will go in friends. Then we have getEntry.cpp. And in getEntry, it will contain getEntry, getName, and getPhone number. And in insert, we'll store insert and sort order. So that's the way I've decided to break this up into three separately compiled modules. The code might look something like this. Remember now, main is going to go in friends. Now I'm actually not going to have a friends.h. I'm going to call this globals.h. My globals.h will essentially be my friends.h. Probably not a good idea to actually sort of change the names a little bit like that, but I did it anyway. So here I've got my protection to make sure I don't have that separately compiled multiple header inclusion problem. And then I include some standard includes that I need. I've got my max friends, the maximum size for my array. They use character strings, some old C style strings. So here's some type depth for those character arrays. They've got a structure for their entry type to hold the names, the area code, phone numbers, and the date of birth for a person. And then I've got the prototypes for open for output and write entries in here. And this is in globals.h. Now in friends.cpp, which is sort of the corresponding CPP file for globals, I've got Maine, and I would also have down below Maine, I would have the function definitions down below Maine. I would have the function definitions for open for output and write entries. Those would be down here below Maine. I've included globals.h so I get those prototypes and the other types that I need. I've also included getEntry.h so that I can call, because main needs to be able to call getEntry. I also include over here insert.h because main needs to call insert. Okay? And the rest of the code we aren't really too concerned with. Now, there is this comment here on globals.h. The globals.h doesn't really correctly model the structure chart program design in terms of limiting access to the way the access is indicated on the structure chart. Let's look at getEntry. It has sort of the same problem. If we look at getEntry.h here on slide 517, in getEntry.h, I'll include globals.h so I can get those types and constants that I need. Then I've also got my prototypes here, getEntry, getName, getPhone number. And in getEntry.cpp, I'll include getEntry.h, and then I would have my function definitions for each of those functions, getEntry, getName, and getPhone number. And that also does not correctly model the structure chart design. Why? In terms of the access that's indicated by the structure chart, it doesn't correctly limit the access. Why? Here's getEntry. GetName and getPhone number would be down below it. That's right. Since I included in getEntry.h, since I included the prototypes for getName and getPhone number, when I include getEntry.h in my friends.cpp above main, those prototypes get included there. That would mean then that the functions that are inside of main or inside of friends.cpp would be allowed to actually call those functions. That would mean that the functions main, open for output, or write entries would be allowed to not only call getEntry, but they would also be allowed to call getName and getPhone number. Now it's a minor point, you might say. And for this small of a program, it certainly is. It's probably not a problem. It probably wouldn't cause any bit of any real problem in a program of this size. However, if you scale this up, think about scaling it up where you're working with a bunch of other programmers in a large programming environment. You've got a bunch of functions in your own code. They've got a bunch of functions in theirs. You include their header file so that you can call some of theirs. And they just went ahead and accidentally just dumped all of their prototypes in their header file. Well, now, let's say you actually meant to call not one of their functions, but somebody else's function in another file. And that other function was named almost the same as one of theirs, but not quite. Well, what if you mistype it? And now you've mistyped it to where now it's actually you're calling their function. And it's a function that you shouldn't have had access to begin with. Will the compiler catch that? No. You'll suddenly turn that typing mistake into an incorrect function call that could be terribly difficult to find. But if your other colleague had been more conscientious about what they put in their header file, and if they hadn't put these prototypes that you don't need access to in their header file, then the compiler wouldn't catch that error. Okay? So this actually is a real problem that you can run into when programs get really large. So you want to code your modules up in such a way that you limit the access. For when you run into a situation like this, where you have other functions inside of a separately compiled module, unit, whatever you want to call it, that doesn't need to be called outside of that code. Their prototype should not go in the header file. Their prototype should go where? In the CPP file. Right below this include for getEntry.h, I should move getName and getPhoneNumber. Those prototypes should be right below that include. That way then, they don't get included in other files. They can't accidentally be called outside of this one. Okay? Now let me go back to the previous slide. Why does global.h not correctly model the structure chart program design? Why is this one not correct? Huh? Every file will have access to call, open for output, and write entries. Every file that includes global.h would be able to call those two functions. But yet, do we show any calls from those outside of main? No. So the prototypes for open for output and write entry should not be in global.h. They should be where? Right here above main, in friends.cpp. Everybody follow that? Does everybody understand this? If you don't, ask me a question about it now, or you're only going to remain confused. Which, you know, in some cases in life is okay. Remaining confused is all right. But most of the time, it's a bad situation to be in. Uh-huh.
So, with having private and public functions, that's enough to keep people from messing with it? That's correct.
In classes, this is similar to classes. In a class, if you put a prototype in the public section of a class, that means it can be invoked by any object of that class, correct? Any code that has access to that class declaration and can declare instances of that class and can therefore invoke the public member functions. But if there are some member functions that you don't want to be called outside of the class, then you don't put their prototypes in the public, you put their prototypes where? In the private section. This is similar to that. Okay? It's limiting the access to where it's needed to be accessed from. Okay? Which gets the compiler to do a lot of checking for us. It gets the compiler to do a lot of work to perhaps catch errors that it might not otherwise catch. Okay? And there's one more question here and a couple other little points to make. If I only want the functions that are inside of that file to be able to call that function, then its prototype goes in that CPP file. But if I want functions in other files to be able to invoke a function, then its prototype goes in the .h file, the header file. That's correct. Okay? That's correct. That's basically the question you ask yourself when you're creating functions. Now there's also the question about which functions should go in which files. Organize it logically. If the functions are related to each other in some way, then they should be grouped together in the same file. If they're not related, don't just throw them in the same file. I tell you what I see a lot of times with people who are just learning separate compilation. What they'll do is they'll code everything up in one big file to begin with, and then they'll just go through and go, okay, let's see, the spec says here I've got to have at least three separately compiled files, oh, here's about a third, and here's about a third, okay, and here's about a third, okay? Yeah, that's gross. Group them at least by some relationship. For the class files, it's simple. For classes, for each class should be a separately compiled unit or module, whatever term you want to use. Every class should have its own .h file and its own CPP file. What goes in the .h file for a class? What goes in the header file for a class? The class declaration. Okay? The class declaration. The class itself. But the function definitions for the class, the member function definitions, go in the class CPP file. And you include the class.h file in the class CPP file. Okay? You have to. Otherwise, the compiler can't figure out what class they're a part of. So, that's simple. The class, separating up class functions into their own separately compiled files, that's simple. Non-class functions, you have to decide. What makes sense? Which ones are logically related to each other? Those you put in a file. Others that are logically related, you put in other files. One other point here. In insert, here's insert.h. Insert.h also does not correctly model the design of the program structure chart. Everybody should be able to answer this one now. Why doesn't it? And what should be moved where? Take a moment to think about that. Look at the structure chart real quick if you need to. Because you might see a question like this on the next test. I might give you a structure chart, give you a couple of separately compiled header files and CPP files and say, this code's not laid out the way it should be according to the structure chart. What should be changed? What should be moved where? Somebody who hasn't answered in quite a while? No, not somebody sitting down front. Some of these people are hiding in the back here. Somebody who doesn't answer usually should answer now. Be brave. Speak up. Yes? Exactly. Search ORs, which is not called by any code outside of these two functions, should not be in the .h file. Search ORD should be in the CPP file down here. Now, there's another question here that is a little bit more interesting. Should the includes, the pound includes, should those be placed in the header file or the CPP file, or do they have to be placed in one or the other? First, let me ask you, do they have to be in one or the other? In order for this thing to compile, do they have to be in one or the other? Do they have to be somewhere, but not somewhere else? Insert.h does have to be included in the insert.cpp file. But what about these others? What about these other two that I've got circled there? What about string.h and globals.h? Do those have to be included in insert.h, or could they be put in insert.cpp? Either way would work. That's the first point. Okay, hold on. Let me explain that. Either way would work. Maybe. What if I take them and I move them down here and put them right above the insert function? I put them right above the insert function but below the include insert.h. Would that create a problem? Yes, it would. What problem would it create?
I
That's right. In other words, for entry type here, for example, entry type for these two prototypes, or for insert, for even if we move search or down here, before the compiler compiles search or actually before it basically compiles its prototype, it needs to be able to find entry type. And if I move those two things below that, then it would come to the insert prototype before it came to the declaration of the entry type structure. And it would complain. It would say, I don't know what that is, even though it's right there below it. Does everybody see that? If global.h has that structure declaration for entry type. And if I move those below the insert.h, what the compiler would see after the preprocessor is finished, the compiler would see the pound include insert.h would get ripped out, and the stuff that was in insert.h would be put in its place. And then the includes below it would get expanded with their .h file. And then the compiler would start compiling it. And the first thing it would come to would be this insert prototype. And in that insert prototype, it sees these entry type entries. And it wouldn't know what to do with them, because it would not have seen the structure declaration above it. However, if I do take those two includes, string.h and globals.h, and I move them above, down into insert.cp, but above insert.h, would that create a problem? Would it then compile? Yes. It would then compile. Basically, by doing that, if you think about it, if I've got them right here in insert.h, that means they're going to get expanded above those prototypes at the moment where they're already at. But if I take them and I move them down here above the include down here, they'll also get expanded above that one. So that would work. I can make this work by either putting them in insert.h or by putting them down here in insert.cp. If I make sure that I order them correctly in insert.cpp. So since I can do it both ways, which way should I do it? Does it really matter, worth crap? Does it really matter how I do it? Huh? What did I say it again? By putting them up here is safer. You're half right and half wrong. Here's my argument. I would say that the include of globals.h should be left here in insert.h. But the string.h should be moved down here. Now, why? Well, here's my argument. You can do it both ways. The compiler doesn't care. So it's just a matter of style, and it's a matter of whether you think it's better one way or the other way. I would argue it's better to leave globals.h in the include file, in the insert.h, but move string.h. Here's my reasoning. I'm going to leave globals.h up here because insert uses a type that's defined in globals.h. And therefore, I don't want to have to worry about that ordering down below. If I put it up here, wherever I include insert.h, I don't have to remember to include globals.h above it. If anybody else include, if I was working with other people, and they were going to use this code, then they wouldn't have to be told to also make sure that they include globals.h above that. Separately compiled modules, just like classes, as much as you can do it, should sort of be self-contained entities. to where they people only need to know as little as possible to use them. And so by putting leaving global.h up here, I don't have to bother to tell anybody else, if you include this file, make sure you also include this other one and that you include it first. Because if I leave it up here and they include insert.h, it automatically happens. And I don't have to worry that it might get included multiple times because global.h has those pound, if not defined, preprocessor statements to avoid that problem. Okay? However, for string.h, there's nothing up here in the prototype that uses anything from string.h. And since there isn't, nobody really needs to know who's using this code that they don't need to know that I'm using those functions in string.h. If I compile them down into here, if I include it down to here, it'll get compiled, they'll get compiled in, it'll be fine. So, the rule of thumb that I use, and it's really just a matter of programming style here, there's no hard and fast rules. This is the convention I think that most people use when they think about this a little bit, is that if in your header file, if you've got some of your prototypes that use certain other types or constants or something, then you include any other header files that they need in that header file. But for everything that isn't needed by the prototypes to compile, those include you put down in the CPP file. Okay? Uh-huh, question?
So, ensure that this is part of the strict parameters and you want to put the same header file, is that right?
That's right. If insert, not switch forward, remember we're going to move in. But if insert, let's say insert used the string type, not a string object type, not the old C style string stuff, but the string type from the string library. In that case, then, I would include string up here. Okay? I would include string up there so that when somebody includes it, they get it, the file needs it, no problem. Alright, there is, let me point out, we're not going to have time to get to this today, I'd hope to. There is some code here at the rest of this section that we will cover on Tuesday, which deals with a static array class. Okay? It should give you some hint for your dynamic array class. You can actually take this code and you can use it. However, you're going to have to expand it. This has a static array in it. You're going to make that a dynamic array. Besides the shift up and shift down functions, which, by the way, their implementation is not shown in the notes. But besides those, you also need to code those up. Notice they're private because they're not needed outside of this class. Basically, you're going to call shift tail up and shift tail down from the insert and delete functions when you insert something or delete something. You will also need a couple other functions. Call one like grow and shrink. Okay? And maybe the resize function that's in your notes. In the notes, when we went over pointers and dynamic memory, we talked about resizing an array. And the resize and the copy function that are in the notes, you can use in the program that you're going to be creating. Speak up. Yes, there is. Why do some header files have the brackets around them and others have quotes? The ones with the brackets are the language system standard header files. The ones that you create, you put quotes around them. Okay? Now, also, we will finish talking about this on Tuesday, and then we will also go into Appendix 1 in your notes, which deals with command line arguments.